Mini episode 1919 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1919. Have with you here today, FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Russ Cohen. We are here to break down the 2025-2026 Stanley Cup playoffs. And I will say here at the outset, Russ, a lot of times tying the show numbers here to 20th century events, that when you look at how the Red Wings performed down the stretch, my Red Wings missing the playoffs, unfortunately, one could compare that perhaps to the Spanish flu outbreak of that period of time as far as the magnitude of disaster involved in that. So that is something where, again, Columbus, I take some joy in that also. Columbus joined us in going right down the crapper also, because I am surrounded by blue jacket casuals where I live.
Right. So,
but I want to get a sense from you as we start here. I got a text from a friend of mine who's a casual who was like, oh, what happened? I saw that now that Buffalo made the playoffs, you guys are the longest drought. So here was my response. I want to know what you think. Took too long to rebuild in the mid-2010s after an amazing 20-year run, and rebuild has stalled with bad contracts to mediocre players and not being aggressive enough to make big swings in the trade market. Many prospects develop nicely, but they're not enough. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is true. I mean, remember down the stretch, they beat the Flyers in a couple of big games that looked good for them, and then they would lose the next ones. So they were able to rise to the occasion at some times, and then they weren't at other times. It was weird. You know, I spoke to Patrick Kane. I actually thought Kane had a better year this year than last year, especially on the power play. He really kind of made things go on the power play. But I do think the not wanting to part with Simon Evanson in a Quinn Hughes deal sealed their fate. I do. I think if they'd have gotten Quinn Hughes, we'd be talking about them in the playoffs, probably in a much better playoff position too than just the last spot. And you saw what Hughes did in Minnesota. Like, he's already set a record for the Minnesota Wild for defensemen for points in the season. He only played like, I don't know, 50 games. So it was a big miss. And then the deadline was always going to be anticlimactic compared to that. And the fact that it seemed like Quinn Hughes really wanted to play there is a big swing and a miss. And so, like, would I fire Steve Yzerman? I would. Now, it doesn't mean I would get rid of him altogether. Maybe I keep him in the front office somewhere, but I'd have to bring in another GM because they have the players. They have the goaltending finally. They have the players. And they ran John Gibson to death. Nobody should ever play like 14 consecutive games in this league. And right, they did that too. But that's out of desperation. So I'm just going to let that one roll. But they need to make a change of some sort because they can't keep going like this. Because, again, it was the same as the Sabres. We all were scratching our heads. The Sabres have a bunch of good players. Why can't they make it? Well, they finally made it. Now it's up to the Red Wings.
Well, the one thing that I've heard in recent days that makes me feel somewhat better about intentions, at least, was that supposedly the deal fell apart not because of an unwillingness on the Wings' end, but that Quinn Hughes didn't want to sign an extension. And that was what made it fall apart. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that. I don't doubt that.
Okay.
But who cares?
Okay.
Like, there is a point when, and listen, I think Evanson's terrific, but there's a point where you have to just take that risk.
Okay.
And you say, okay, we bring Quinn Hughes in. We get him for a couple playoffs. Let's see what happens here. Maybe he'll change his mind.
Well, and that's it too. And that's one of the things that's really sort of puzzled me about Yzerman as GM. And I've said previously, you know, probably my greatest sports hero. So I would be very, very pained if it didn't work out. But the sense of, like, you know, and I know there will never, ever, ever, ever be a roster again like the O2 Wings. But like some of the rooms he played in, right? Like, how does he not look around and be like, we need to get at least whatever percentage of that as possible? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I covered the tail end of some of those teams, and it was star studded, and it was a different era. They did have a mix of young and old.
Sure.
Pavel Datsyuk did cover up a lot of ills, I will say that. Mm-hmm. Because he was probably even better than we all thought, honestly.
Yeah, at the time.
But still, they won with like Mike Vernon and net, who, no offense to Mike Vernon, but he wasn't a top end goalie in the league. But they were able to pull some things out based on that talent. And they've built up a certain amount of talent, they have. And they should have just done this deal. And if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. I think Red Wings fans would forgive if Quinn Hughes in a couple of years signed somewhere else, but they went far in the playoffs. I think that would be forgiven. Be like, okay, that's the price that you got to pay sometimes.
The third and fourth lines on the team are just atrocious. I'm seeing a lot of stuff where people are saying, oh, lack of heart. And like that might be part of it. I mean, how do you lose a game 8-1 to Florida the last night of the season? It looks like they just mailed it in, but it's
no,
like,
they did mail it in. Florida basically was like, we're going to finish this season on a high note. And the Red Wings didn't feel that way.
Yeah. And it's like, but part of it is.
And the coach let them know.
He did. But like, part of it is too, is like how much of it is that a lot of the roster, just they are what they are. And the team got hot early on and were playing probably above their heads, even if I didn't want to see it that way. But I mean, I just think a lot of this roster is what it is right now at this point. Some bad contracts to mediocre players, like just clean house, bring up all of Grand Rapids while we're at it. You could do worse based on the way they're playing.
Sometimes teams do that, and sometimes you get mixed results. I would just say this.
Mm-hmm.
In his draft year, I thought Marco Kasper was a good player. I never thought he was a great player. I think he was maybe overhyped a bit. Now he's 22. I think he'll get better, but he's not going to be like a 60-point guy. I think we could all see that. So, you know, that's one of those where could they have had a better draft selection than Marco Kasper? Yeah, probably. I mean, he's played in the NHL, and so you can't totally kill him for it, but it's just one of those where it's like, why him? Why not somebody else? So I think if you look at a few of those kinds of picks, you could come to those conclusions. And I think that's maybe part of that, what you're talking about as far as development and depth.
Okay, yeah, I kind of agree also. So, all right, so good friend of the show, Paul Pasek, tune in for at least the first couple minutes here to get more of an answer to your question here. Who better to ask on something like this than Russ Cohen? And for the teams that were fortunate enough to make the playoffs, we have, as per always, our breakdown here of the thing, and we're going to get into that here. Uno momento, I will bring this up. You can find us on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And I am looking for, let's see. Okay, it should be showing up here in a moment. But regardless, when you look at how the teams stacked up here, we get into it where there is, at a macro level, the story of a good amount of turnover for this year's playoffs. I think it's five teams coming in that weren't there last year, which is right around sort of the modern upper tier, essentially, of change for a season. And teams that you really aren't used to seeing in here. Buffalo breaks their very, very long drought. Utah, for the first time since the team moved to Utah, it hasn't been that many years, but they are back in, et cetera, et cetera. Even Anaheim with their rebuilding project. And we shall see. There were teams last year, like St. Louis, that made it, that fell back again this year. We'll have to see where an Anaheim shakes out in that. But your thoughts on the overall big picture here of some of the change with some of the teams making it. And obviously, when you look at injuries to Florida, we knew that was going to be very, very tough. We didn't know if it was going to take them out of it altogether. It did. New Jersey, once again, failing to match expectations. This was yet another season where I thought your Rangers were going to do more so, but, you know,
the Rangers were not a good team.
Okay.
And the Flyers, you know, I cover the Flyers, and they've had a nice season. Yeah, it's a combination of things. I mean, the record, the schedule was tough. because of the Olympics. So there was like pre-Olympic, post-Olympic. And some teams benefited from that Olympic break. I think the Flyers did. That time off gave guys like Matvei Michkov extra time to kind of keep in condition, maybe even get in better condition because he didn't start the year in the best condition. And they saw some real gains, and they were one of the best teams out of the Olympic break. So were the Blues, but the Blues just were in such a hole they couldn't make the playoffs. So I think when you see something like that, you know that this year's schedule, because of the Olympics, was a big part of this. I think Florida will be back next year. I think it was going to be tough because they also had a lot of Olympians too. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I look at it and I'm like, there's always going to be with the way the point system is in the NHL, there's always going to be three or four teams kind of getting in there that you don't expect. It's hard to stay incumbent. I think it's getting a little harder. So, yeah, I'm not completely surprised about that. But again, part of what happens here is, like, you have these teams tiered. How much of a chance does some of these bottom teams really have? Now, would I consider Vegas really a bottom team? No, they just had a lousy season, and now John Tortorella seems to have them on track. So I think they're kind of like the Blues were years ago. Like, they're not that bad, but they just happen to be in that spot. Edmonton the same way. They're not that bad. So I think but these upper tier teams, I think, are a lot better than some of these other lower teams.
Well, and there is, interesting parallels when you start to look at it that way, in terms of, you mentioned St. Louis in 2019, and they were a team that, again, rebounded from that sort of historic bottom they were at there. It is the story of Gloria, after all, and where I've been saying for years and years and years, I haven't been up to the Boston area in a long, long, long time, but the next time I do, I'm walking in a sports bar and I'm dumping like $10 worth of quarters in there to play Gloria on a loop. But
Boston's great. Like, I love going to Boston when there's a Stanley Cup. Those fans are fantastic. They really are.
Well, they're going to get to see some action here against Buffalo, at least in the first round. And when you look at that, I sort of couple that with the year before with Washington, because these are teams that could not get over the hump for a long period of time. The only team of that era that I can think of that matches them in that regard that never made it was San Jose. Right. They never made it over the hump. Those two teams did.
And they were in the Cup once against Pittsburgh and got beat pretty easy. So,
yes. And so there's a certain element of that also in what you're talking about, not just doing what St. Louis did as far as the comeback, but of finally getting over the hump. And when you look at this, yes, the tier levels that we have, and again, this is, I've got this up there now for those catching this on video on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. It is the 2025-2026 NHL end of regular season breakdown from FDH, and a mashup of different categories here statistically, including the first category on there you'll see is our power rankings. So sometimes our power rankings correlate to where they came out in the mix, sometimes not as closely. But when you look at this, just a general sense, and I think that this is not any different than what we're used to, what I'm about to say, in talking to FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu, having done our NBA playoff breakdown earlier in the week here, that where you've got maybe four or five teams there on the NBA side, I think, that could win it all. I said in looking at this that, like, I think I'm not going to necessarily say half the bracket, but you could potentially maybe see seven teams that might have a chance to win it all. When you're talking about somebody like Vegas, that, again, was down and out and is, you know, rallying now very strongly. Maybe Edmonton also. I'm a little more dubious of them.
I'm a little dubious of them too, sure.
Yeah, so I mean.
But they still have Connor McDavid, and he could be a game changer in every game.
Sure. Would you say that we may become potentially close to half the bracket that could win this thing?
I don't know if it's half. I would say up to seven seems right.
Okay.
The only thing is, and this is where your power rankings, you can't do anything about it, is we really don't know if Victor Hedman's playing in the playoffs.
Yes.
And so, like, there's no way of knowing that when you're doing these power rankings, because I agree that Tampa would be there if Victor Hedman is back.
Yes.
But they're having a press conference today. We don't know. Okay. And if he, and my feeling is if he's not back today, I don't know if he's making the playoffs because he left for personal reasons. And generally, you know, if he's not back by now, you would think that that might take a little longer. So
right.
That's the only thing that I think upsets the apple cart a little bit on this list. Otherwise, it's solid. I agree with Colorado right where they are. I think in my eyes, they've been the favorite, but Tampa's great too. So like you could flip it either way. And but I think the interesting thing is this, and this is why hockey is a weird sport.
Mm-hmm.
The East killed the West this year in the regular season.
Yeah.
Just destroyed them. And I still think the champion might come out of the West. And so, like, you know, when it comes to that, because the West's power teams are better than the overall feistiness of the East. And okay. I think that's the difference, is the top tier West team. Now, again, one great team is not going to be in the playoffs in the second round because of the Stars and Wild. They're both great teams. Somebody's not making it.
Change the format, Bettman.
I'm not, you know.
Go to conference 1 through 8, Russ. I keep saying this.
Like we say this, to. I know, we say this now, but if it were like a decade ago or more, and you wouldn't be saying it because you'd be like, well, these teams weren't the same as they were then as they are now. Like there's always going to be these ups and downs of franchises. They'll change it at some point if they feel like they need to. But the problem is ESPN likes these killer first round matchups. It gets ratings. And the NHL kind of likes it because then it gets everybody in that mode that, hey, the NHL has the best playoffs, which I think they do. And so I don't think they are changing it, Rick. So there you go.
Well, what that is, though, again, it's kind of the loan shark mentality. Pay me now, pay me later. You're taking somebody out of the bracket that is going to make it, you know, more compelling in the second round or potentially the conference finals. Right. So, you know, and I know there's no such thing as a free lunch. You can have this uber first round matchup, such as we're going to have, but it is going to be at the expense of what comes after this. So,
yeah, no doubt. I mean, the one thing I'll say is the NHL is fortunate where the Stanley Cup usually is amazing and well contested, and it's rare that you get like just a walkover. And because of the gravitas of the actual cup itself and everything else, if it isn't even the best matchup that you thought it was going to be at the beginning of the year, most people don't walk away from the Stanley Cup saying it really sucked this year. So I think until that happens, you're not going to see change.
I think that is true. We've managed to have pretty quality matchups in the finals the last several years here. You might
don't
have to
say
go
finals.
Back.
That's an NBA thing.
Final, yeah, that is true. And by the way, and I'm always good about that when I label the segments. So I might have slipped on the banana peel just now, but I've generally been pretty good about that. I think you probably got to go back to probably 21, the whole COVID timeline here, Tampa Bay and Montreal. And Montreal being there was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
But that has really been the exception to the rule. You are pretty much right about that, that you've had a long stretch of that being the case. And I think, again, when you look at the top tiers of both conferences this year, I think that's what makes it likely to continue to ensue, because we talked about Tampa Bay before, and we'll see about Hedman. And I think him being out would put and I'm picking them to win it all. I am picking them over Colorado in the final, but yeah, that would put a ceiling on what they're able to accomplish.
I mean, Ryan McDonough, if he stays healthy, maybe they could cover it up, but because Radish has had a career year. But other than that, yeah, it would be hard to pick them as a cup winner at that point.
I think I see this as sort of, you know, the last great hurrah of the run that they've had, and that I think they can get over the line one more time here. But you look at this, and if it's not them coming out of the East, of course you have a couple of the younger teams that are kind of rising up, but the other obvious one to look at would be Carolina, because they've been on the doorstep the last couple of years, made some moves in the offseason, were a little bit aggressive in that regard. Goaltending's been up and down based on, you know, who's ended up playing there. But I mean, if it's not Tampa Bay coming out of the East, I think there's a very, very strong chance that it's Carolina. And I think you still have to very much like the East's chances if that's the case.
Yeah, Carolina, I just saw recently, and I'm going to say now that I had belief in Brandon Bussey. I wanted to see him down the stretch live in a game that mattered. Even though they sat 4 or 5 guys, they still gave the Flyers all they could handle, and the Flyers eventually won that game. That impressed me. And so it's like, if they're going to get that level of goaltending, I think they have the best system in hockey right now, as far as everybody on that team playing it. It's boring as hell, but it's effective. And, you know, going back to Jacques Lemaire and guys like that, but it works. And so if that's going to hold true, they're going to be a very tough out. Now, their thing is get to the conference finals, and then we'll start talking about the Hurricanes. It's hard to talk about the Hurricanes until they do that. That's just how high the bar is for them now.
Yes, and that they have to clear that bar. They've had some very strong disappointments in the latter rounds of the Eastern playoffs in recent years. And then you start to look at a couple of if it's going to be some of the younger teams potentially rising up here, potentially Buffalo, Montreal, Ottawa, Philadelphia, with some of the younger players becoming a part of their core. So yep. I don't see that being the case as far as being able to get past either Tampa Bay or Carolina, but these are teams that you could make a case for. And certainly the darlings pick at the moment seems to have been Buffalo, based on the way that they've played down the stretch.
Yeah. I mean, Buffalo, if I had more belief in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, I think they could do that. I don't have that kind of belief in him. Mm-hmm. So he has to prove that to me before I could do that. Pittsburgh, the interesting thing about Pittsburgh is I think they're better than people think. I think they've done a lot more than just around the edges. If you look at their roster, who they've added, secondary scoring, guys like Anthony Mantha, who you know very well, and he
yes.
had a heck of a season. always had a great shot. So, like, if you could just get him scoring, you know what he could do. But anyhow, Stuart Skinner's an interesting one, because on another show that I do, you know, everybody likes to just throw out Stuart Skinner stinks. And it's like, okay, he has some bad games. There's no question. But he still has 14 playoff wins. And he has been to the Stanley Cup, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't take that away from a guy. And so, like, on the other show, I brought up a goalie who I thought the other host would like. And I said, he's got two more playoff wins than that goalie. What did you think of that guy? You know, and it's just, I get it, and it's a mix. But if the Stuart Skinner is going to be the guy, and all of a sudden he's going to be that same guy that did have good moments, Pittsburgh's a really good team. And so I can't keep them out of it on this one, you know, because I think their window is this year or next year. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see how they do.
I mean, I look at Pittsburgh and I look at Boston making it, and it's a thing where, and I try not to be colored by my thoughts on the franchises and my fandom, but it's like, I'm kind of looking at it like death throes kind of a thing, like one last chance to get in there before the reckoning comes. I kind of see that happening.
I think Boston's a paper tiger, to be honest. I think Boston's a paper yeah. tiger. I thought they had outkicked their coverage many times this year. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Swayman's finally bounced back. Last year was just a terrible year for him. That happens yeah. sometimes. Mm-hmm. Maybe the contract pressure, you know, he had that new contract. But I don't know. Boston was too up and down for me down the stretch for me to have any kind of real belief in them. So I don't think they're going to do much. I actually think the Sabres are going to take them apart pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to lead into this whole Buffalo mania thing, which might be just. I mean, the sad part for me is I have to go to Buffalo twice this year, once for the combine, once for the draft. Am I really going there for the Stanley Cup too? Stay tuned.
It's an interesting sports town. I've been there.
I love the food. I like the people a lot. I'm just saying, should I have to go to Buffalo three times in a year?
I get that. That's above and beyond.
I'd be like going to Cleveland three times in a year.
Well, that would be different, but
would it?
Buffalo being a town where myself and the late great FDH Lounge dignitary Ken Detweiler, when I was a sidekick on his show on the old Sports Talk Network, Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler back in the day, we actually went up to throw out the first pitch at a Buffalo game, both of us.
Oh,
and,
wow.
What it also was I didn't realize this, and this was the commercialization of the first pitch. Like, we were part of a progression of people throwing out a first pitch. Oh, okay. So, okay, at least I could say I did it. I practiced, you know, ahead of time just so I wouldn't embarrass myself.
Oh, you have to practice ahead of time. If you don't, you're stupid.
Yes, yes. And I had enough on it. And I had an encounter. The one player that was I was interviewing players in the clubhouse. I was getting some sound. I was being accompanied by one of the very helpful media guys there for the team. The one guy who was rude to me, very, very, very rude. It will not shock you to know, Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, I'm not shocked about it.
Very much didn't want to be there. So
I mean, I've had some guys be rude to me in an MLB locker room, and that's why I cover hockey more than baseball. I love baseball, but some guys are just insufferable.
Well, and to be honest with you, and I was, while I'm right about the work rate, that may or may not have something to do with why on our WrestleMania preview, I actually buried his wife, Jade Cargill, as a horrible worker. Could have been a little bit of residuals from that clubhouse time. But yeah, Buffalo, that could be very interesting if they make a run. I've got them playing Tampa Bay in the second round. I see it going that way. And the Western Conference,
I'm going to tell you who the guy is.
Okay.
It was Bobby Parnell. And I think this probably happens more often than not.
Okay.
I'm interviewing the young players. It was great. This was after we did a book signing in Binghamton.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my Met book came out, numbers don't lie. And so I asked Bobby Parnell a few questions and he gave me one word answers. Now, he was the Mets closer at the time, but he was on a rehab assignment. And I think some players, when they're there in AAA on a rehab assignment, just feel like they're too good for the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the attitude that I caught, and I just walked away from him. I'm just like, whatever, you're just a jerk.
Well, and Brandon Phillips was actually demoted. He wasn't even there, so either way, an injury thing. Yeah. Right.
Either way, it's like it's the same thing. And I think it's the entitlement that, oh, wow, I'm in AAA. Instead of like hockey player would be like, yeah, okay, this sucks, but I'm going to work my way back. I'm going to make it. Baseball players like, no, I don't deserve this.
Well, the other thing is, too, that the Tribe had over-promoted him because, again, the way that this organization has worked really for all of the 21st century is, you know, going for short-term kind of, you know, thing to deflect from the fact that the payroll is basically 59 cents total. So it was a thing like he got promoted way too soon because they wanted to show the returns on the trade, the Bartolo Colon trade. And it was like, you idiots, he's not ready yet.
Right.
So the other thing is, too, you give the flip side of the coin, the very nice front office guy, the media guy, I wish I could remember his name. I'm there in the clubhouse. I'm interviewing various players, and he brings over one of them, and I'm just not recognizing him. And I'm asking the most generic questions.
Right.
And he holds up a sign behind the guy's back because he realizes this. It says Josh Bard. So my next question is, so how's the injury rehab going? I was able to ask a specific question when I recognized
him. No, that's good, though. But at least you did the right thing and started beating around the bush a little when you weren't sure. Because sometimes that happens it happens to everybody when you do interviews. Sometimes guys with beards look different. A lot of times you don't hear when they announce their name or they don't announce their name.
Yeah.
Like you're at a disadvantage. So that's the way you have to do it.
Yeah, and what a nice guy to have clued me in, and then like I was able to make it immediately sound like I knew who he was all along. Love when that happens, and that is.
And I'm just going to say this because you brought it up.
Yeah,
I did put a WrestleMania article up on Sportsology.
Nice.
I haven't done one in years. Why did I do it? Because this year is going to be atrocious.
Yes, absolutely.
The build up to it. There's ticket sales. They're not selling out. I don't know how they're going to fake people. They're going to maybe put holograms like they did during the pandemic. Maybe they're just going to give away seats. I think Triple H has been sort of ousted as the main guy from TKO, it looks like. And I just think they're not creative. Like, I'm going to give you an example. One thing that I cited. You can't push a big match with Stephanie Vaquer and Liv. And I like them both. But Stephanie Vaquer hasn't wrestled since March 16th. It can't all be promos or run-ins. At some point, you actually have to wrestle people to build up momentum. And they have decided that they're going to go with the card and not have any injuries. So like the last 2-3 weeks leading up to WrestleMania has been brutal. Other than verbal promos, which I like them when they're coming in between matches. You can't show 2.5-hour shows with half hour of commercials or more and then have these matches where you're using all your extra guys that don't have a role in WrestleMania, like last night's Battle Royal. Like that was a think tank one, wasn't it? Well, who could we throw in there that's in Vegas that we're not going to use on the main event and you know, keep SmackDown going. Oh, okay, we got these 10 guys. Let's just throw them in. I mean, come on.
I agree. And to go to the WrestleMania preview that I did with FDH Lounge dignitary Jake Digman, I said that, like, either the women's title matches should always be viable semi-main events both night. I grade a card by the number of viable semi-main events that you have in there.
Yeah.
That you for WrestleMania, there should be multiple ones per night. That one's not even close because, and again, me being the bitter AEW homer I am, they only signed away Stephanie Vaquer to keep her out of AEW.
Right.
She had that breakout performance at Forbidden Door. Boom, they sign her. They don't know what to do with her, Russ.
She hasn't wrestled at all. It's ridiculous.
They are totally coasting in this match off of Liv Morgan being over. That is
correct.
All that is carrying this program because they have
Stephanie Vaquer is great. Don't get me wrong.
She's amazing, but they have no idea what to do with her.
Right. This is not an indictment of her abilities. It's an indictment of their ability to do something. And, like, you know, again, and I don't want to go too deep into this, but I knew when they signed with ESPN that ESPN was going to make them more important than the NHL. And sure enough, they have. And it's like, when you see Danhausen, and I saw just a clip, right? I stopped watching ESPN for the last 2 weeks. I would at least watch one or two shows. I've stopped watching because I know that they're just getting invaded with WWE people, and it's uncomfortable. When you see Danhausen and Stephen A. Smith, Stephen A. Smith does not want to be near him. He does not want to talk to him. He didn't want any part of it, but he knows the network is pushing this so badly that he has to play along because they pay him. And it's just like, that's when it used to be nice when wrestlers would get on shows organically and work it out. Even my wife was just like, when is this going to stop? Like, you know, you can't have Paul Heyman on every week talking about sports. No offense to Paul, but he can't hold up his end of the bargain with that. And so it's like, that I think in a way ESPN has crippled its own coverage of other sports by putting too much attention on the WWE.
Yeah, I think so. And to put a tack in it, I will close this part of it with this, is that an observation that I made. Well, first of all, observation Jake made to me. This would salvage the whole Stephanie Vaquer thing. He says double turn. She's going to join the Judgment Day, go in with Dom.
Yeah.
That would give her the kind of, you know, personality boost that she needs.
Yeah, she could replace Liv then, because we know Liv's going to go to Hollywood. So that would actually make sense.
Yes. So Jake has the idea for how to save
them. You know what, Jake? That's really good. That's better than anything they come up with all year.
Which means they probably won't do it.
They won't do
it. But the other thing with Paul Heyman is that, again, on some of these interviews, some of the things that he's saying, there's like such palpable desperation based on the way that the vision has flopped, where he's this reminds me of the early days of the ECW locker room. I said to Jake on the preview, I said, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, what would have happened if Paul Heyman was in 2000 WCW and we put him with the New Blood? That's what it reminds me of. Not get out of here with ECW start redux.
I think Paul's really good. I think he hit too much of a brick wall on this one.
Yeah. When a guy like Paul Heyman can't get your group over, you really blow and you are hopeless.
And I'm going to give you one prediction.
Okay.
That Brock Lesnar match, it's going to last 2.5 minutes because Brock Lesnar will be heaving at that point in the match. He's so out of shape.
Could
now, be. He may look all muscular, but if you notice aerobically, he can't run to the ring, and everything's a squash match because the guy has no wind anymore.
No cardio. Well,
no cardio.
I said it'll be a redux, except it'll be Brock doing the job this time. Redux of Brock Goldberg from Mania 33. Jake said, no, I think it's going 10 to 15. I think Brock is going to work hard to put him over strong.
No way.
I think it'll be a disaster if that happens.
They're going to cut it short. He can't do it.
Yeah. The ref will be throwing up the X symbol.
Will definitely go up there.
And by the way, you know, this is you remember the days of the WWWF, Square Garden,
Bruno Sammartino is still my favorite wrestler.
Yeah, and that's where, like, we're actually paying tribute to that in this segment because they would do an intermission. So our intermission between conferences here has been the Mania talk. Now that the intermission's done, Western Conference, a lot more. I think continuity from past seasons, the fact that Vegas and Edmonton eventually got their stuff together enough to be able to make the playoffs, which was in doubt a lot longer than it should have been. Colorado has been very strong, obviously, during the season. Yeah. We already talked about this, the Dallas and Minnesota, oy vey, they're having to play in the first round. So you've got a number of teams that you're used to seeing in there. Even to some extent, LA, they've been there in recent years. They kind of limped in at the last minute here. But ultimately, the Western Conference, you've got some of the traditional powers that have been there the last couple of years. Colorado, who won it all in 22. Vegas, who won it all in 23. Edmonton, who's been in the last two finals or final. How would you say it that way? If it's like year, final years,
I think you could say finals that way.
Okay.
You can't say that it's the 2026 NHL.
For 1 year. It never finals. Happens. It's never right. For 1 year. It's for multiple years. Okay.
Right. I think then you could make that.
Okay. So that's not a faux pas on my part, but that's, so when you look at it again, and a couple of these teams in particular, I think would be very, very, very strong favorites to come out of the West. I would say probably in this order, Colorado, and then whoever wins the Dallas Minnesota series, albeit that's going to take a lot out of them.
Yes. Sometimes the hard road is the hard way to make it to the cup. And so that may be the problem for both those teams. I do think the Mammoth and the Golden Knights will be a heck of a series. Mm-hmm. I picked Vegas, but I'm only picking them because of the boost they got from John Tortorella. If Carter Hart fails in net, will Aiden Hill be able to do it again? I don't know. I legitimately don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. That's going to be a very good series. And talked about this before, something that you saw more so with the Eastern Conference, some of these young teams getting over the line to make it in there. Anaheim's been in a rebuild for what feels like forever. They end up making it in. And again, you know, good luck with that as far as your draw goes, I guess.
Yeah. So, I think, yeah, I mean, when we do the predictions, I'll explain it. But I think the Ducks are going to have their hands full. I understand why there's this Edmonton hate, and because they haven't won a cup, basically just because they haven't won a cup, but that doesn't make Anaheim better.
No, it doesn't. And that's where, again, when you look at Edmonton, and this is the challenge in the, ironically for now, he's not the GM who put the pieces in place, Ken Holland, but him being there in Edmonton, it's almost symbolic to me of Ken Holland, who, again, couldn't have been a better GM for the Wings when there was no Stanley Cup as far as getting the pieces in. And for a long time before he was ultimately moved on from Detroit, however they want to paint that, I was critical of him long before he ended up leaving, because I was like, this guy is good for one set of circumstances, but not so much for the others.
No,
so
he has a strength, but the secret sauce in Detroit was Jim Neal. I think most people realize that.
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely. And the guys that were underneath in the front office. The other thing is, and I'll compare this to, and there was a very famous interview that was given a couple of years ago, David Griffin, the former GM in Cleveland. He was like, you know what? I don't know that I had as much fun with the Cavs winning the title as I thought I would. I want to do a rebuild like in New Orleans. I want to sink my teeth into it. Now, David Griffin was freaking elite with those mid-2010s Cavs. Like, this guy, him and Gilbert could like manipulate the salary cap and get guys in. Like, he was a wizard. David Griffin was, you know, amazing. But like, he goes to New Orleans and I was like, bro, you need to stick to what you're good at.
Right. I mean, New Orleans is a whole different ball game. They never seem to be able to get on track.
If I'm a team on the cusp, I'm hiring that guy to get me over the hump. If I'm a rebuilding team, not so much after what we saw in New Orleans. But I'm not making this all about Ken Holland, but I'm just saying the fact that he was with Edmonton and with Detroit. We talked about Detroit present day previously. In the salary cap era, looking at the big two in Edmonton, and yes, they have some other outstanding players. I mean, they've got probably five or six really, really strong star caliber players. But like, are they not sort of like the trillionaires version of where the Wings are? I criticized the Wings depth previously. And like with Edmonton, it's sort of an inherent kind of a thing of like, how can you have this much elite star power at the top for what you're going to have to pay for it. Now that you're really paying the market rates at this stage in their career, although they have been for the last couple of years, I guess you would say, but then the rest of the roster, I do sort of grant them God's grace a little bit in that way. It's hard to build out enough of a roster. You saw the last 2 years, they didn't have the depth that Florida did. Now, few teams do, right. But that's a challenge they're going to have as long as they stay with the model that they have. But you'd have to be insane to break up McDavid and Dreisaitl, even with that being the case.
Yeah, I mean, the Oilers are kind of like a pyramid scheme, but I think they've pieced in enough on defense to kind of get them by. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have three really good defensemen, and then they pieced in the rest. And I think the guys they pieced in are okay. I also think, like, when they picked up, like, Matt Savoy and Pod Colson, they've pieced in guys who are good at different things, Adam Henrique, that maybe can complement the high-end talent. But at the end of the day, their high-end talent is still higher than a lot of teams in this league. And so that could carry you in a series and to a cup, as we've seen. So I don't think unless the cap like triples, I don't think they're going to cure that situation. So this is what they've done. I don't think Ken Holland's doing a bad job at all. I just think he's limited in what he actually can do based on what you said.
Yeah, I think that he does have the limitations as far as how he rounds out the roster.
This is his last job. Like, we all know that.
I think so. I think that's very clearly the case. You look at, you were talking about, again, before some of the predictions here for the conferences. In the Eastern Conference, as I've alluded to, I've got Tampa Bay and Buffalo in the second round. Tampa Bay emerging, although, again, as you said, we wait to hear what happens with Victor Hedman, because that's going to be determinative of so much. I've got Carolina over Philadelphia in the second round in the East. Tampa Bay over Carolina. I would probably flip-flop those two and perhaps even say Buffalo against Carolina if Hedman is out. But with the presumption that he'll be back at some point, I'm splitting the difference. I don't think he'll be back at the outset. I think he'll be back at some point in the East playoffs. I've got Tampa coming out of the East. In the Western Conference, again, that hard road for the winner of the Dallas-Minnesota series here. I've got the winner of that series being Dallas, but succumbing to Colorado in a very tough series. Vegas and Edmonton in the Pacific Division. I've got Vegas coming out in a pretty hard-fought one. Colorado over Vegas in the East. I've got Tampa Bay over Colorado in the Cup Final. But again, I would probably be picking somebody else coming out of the East if it turns out Hedman's out for all of this. What are your thoughts on the two conferences, Russ?
Yeah, I'm really going to mostly give you the first round and then talk in generalities, because I got to do a whole bunch of other shows. And
sure,
I can't let it all out in one spot, unfortunately.
Sure.
So we'll go with Flyers Pittsburgh. I think that'll be a really hard fought series. Historically, Flyers have always played well in Pittsburgh, so I think they'll win one there, and I think they'll win one at home. But I think Pittsburgh is going to win the series in Game 6 in Philly. I think Pittsburgh is determined. I think Crosby's still one of the five best players in the league, even at the age of 38. I think the Flyers are on a terrific upswing here. But they still have some issues that we'll see if, you know, they have the worst power play in the league as an example. And really right now, Pittsburgh is in top seven in the power play and penalty kill, and about third or fourth in goals for. Now, we know goals go down in the playoffs, but if it becomes a power play, you know, special teams series, Pittsburgh's going to win that. And so first round, generally there are a lot of penalties, and then they start to wane from there. So that's the way I see that series going. I think the Canes are going to beat the Sens kind of easy in five. I don't think that's a big deal. I think the Oilers will beat the Ducks in five, because I don't think the Ducks are good enough yet, age-wise, experience-wise, to kind of deal with the top six of Edmonton. I think that I think the only sweep I have is the Avs over the Kings. The Kings are just, they don't excite me at all. I'm happy that Anze Kopitar gets to walk away in the playoffs at some point, because I think he's a great dude. And so, but I don't see them putting up much of a struggle against the Avs.
I hope it's not in a sweep. He deserves better than that. At least it would
he
be.
He does, but ice. I feel like that one's a sweep. You know, I know nobody wants to play sweeps anymore, but that's the way I feel in that one.
I came close on that. I think the Kings can steal one, which would ironically mean he ends his career on the road. But I came very close, and I would agree with you. That one feels very sweepy.
Yeah, Bruins, Sabres. I've got the Sabres in five. The only thing that extends the series is if the Sabres have to switch goalies.
Okay.
But I still think their defense is one of the elite defenses in the league, talent-wise, and they have size. And I think the Bruins are just going to, like, punch them in the mouth and see if they can get away with a physical series, because that's the only way they could win. So I don't think that's going to work out for them. Mammoth Golden Knights, I really like Utah. I do. And if this were a situation where John Tortorella wasn't the coach and he didn't just take over the team and was undefeated going into the playoffs, I probably would pick Utah. But right now it's hard to do it. Dylan Gunther is going to be one of the better goal scorers in the playoffs. I just look at that team, Clayton Keller. There's so many guys that I like on Utah. Now, Sergachev, I think, is at this point becoming a really good playoff veteran. But look, Mark Stone, Jack Eichel. Like, we saw Jack Eichel win a really important game down the stretch in the shootout. He's still Jack Eichel. Mm-hmm. And Jack Eichel is a top five player in the league, I think.
Yeah.
So when you look at that and they have Mitch Marner, you have to give them the edge. So I think I'm going Vegas in seven. And then Habs Lightning, again, I don't know what's going on with Victor Hedman. And so, like, I think Tampa's going to have trouble with the Canadiens if Jakub Dobrysch gives a good effort here. We'll see. He's been a little up and down. I saw the Flyers dismantle him with guys out of the lineup. Maybe he just, you know, wasn't motivated. I don't know. But the Flyers killed him. That said, Cole Caulfield's just, you know, his nickname of Goal Caulfield is legit. what do you have, 51, something like that? I was really happy for the guy. Just a tremendous guy. Nick Suzuki's elite. He is now an elite center. I wrote about it on NHL Draft Buzz. Voted for him for the Selkie. Like, Nick Suzuki is the real deal. Lane Hudson, hard to deal with. So Tampa's going to have their hands full. Tampa could beat them earlier if Hedman's there, because Tampa can play a physical game that the Canadians are not able to play. We don't even know if Brendan Gallagher will be in the lineup. Like, he against Philly, he probably had his best game of the year. I was talking to some of the writers for Montreal, because he had been scratched.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of having to prove, sing for his supper, as they say. So I don't know. He might not even be out there game one. So, and the Noah Dobson loss for Montreal was huge.
Yeah.
Because in that game against Philly, what I saw was their defense is like askew now, because Dobson was like a glue guy for them. And now they didn't know how to kind of operate. They at least got a couple of games in without Dobson, and maybe that'll help them now for the playoffs. But when I watched it, it was topsy-turvy. Like, their defense was the worst I'd seen it all year, and I do think it's because of that. So we'll see. We'll see how that part of it goes. That part, for me, will be very interesting. And I'm trying to think, did I leave anybody out? No, I think I covered everybody.
I think you did.
Oh, no, Stars Wild. Stars Wild.
Yeah. What do you think there?
I saved them for last. Yeah, I've got the Stars in six, because I don't know what Minnesota is going to do in net. I think they're going to go with Philip Gustafson to start because they're loyal. How long will they stick with him? Because I think Wallstedt is their better goalie. I felt that for half the season. Could Jesper Wallstedt be the next Cam Ward? He could be. Will he get the chance to be?
Yeah.
That's the question. So I don't know. Whoops. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out. I'm going to take the Stars in six because I like Jake Oettinger, and I think Robertson will finally have a big playoff. And I don't know. Heiskanen, I hear, is banged up. But that's going to fall in the favor of the Wild. And I think Quinn Hughes will be the best defenseman on the ice offensively. And Thomas Harley is like having a second number one for Dallas. So, yeah, I kind of feel bad that Tyler Seguin's not going to be there. I really like Tyler Seguin and liked watching him in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But Jamie Benn's still hanging around, right? So
yeah,
you still have a little bit of that old guard. And we got to give Jim Neal credit. Like, Jim Neal extended Jamie Benn when everybody said he's too old. And Jim Neal's like, listen, this guy brought us here. I don't care. I'm doing it. And,
yeah,
you know, he's still cranking along. So I'll go Stars in six, but I think this one could be a different series. Could go seven if Wallstedt gets in there.
Yeah, it is the headliner of the first round. And when you're talking about Minnesota's attitude towards their goalie, I was having it pop into my head from Shorzy, good old Hitchcock in his Newfie accent. Loyal to the soil, boys.
I haven't watched Shorzy, but that's funny.
Yes, yes. Terry Ryan, I believe, playing him and doing an amazing job in that. But yeah, it is going to be an epic playoff run here, as it always has. And it has been.
Yeah, this first round is going to be great.
It's going to be awesome, and look forward to circling back around with you once we get to the final singular, the Stanley Cup final for this
year. I'll try and be on the draft show with the New York Jets, depending on where the Flyers are in the playoffs. And as long as I'm not at a playoff game, I will certainly cover that draft and see how the Jets screw it up.
Are the Flyers playing on Thursday night?
Yes, they are.
Oh, they are. Well,
next Thursday. It's next Thursday or this Thursday?
This Thursday.
Oh, no. They're good. Next Thursday.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Okay. Oh, very good. Very good. Look forward to having you in. Yeah, we're going coast to coast as we did last year, live for the NFL draft. And that is going to be a thing. I'll save this for when we're off air. It's something I have to show you for our preparation here. But this is going to be it'll be epic doing the NFL draft show with you and our cast of thousands coast to coast on Thursday. Pardon me. Been great doing this show with you here.
Agreed.
And of course, look forward to doing the final preview when it comes to that. The great Russ Cohen, everybody. And go check out NHL Draft Buzz. That is a great site there. I know you're ramping up this time of year for your coverage with that.
Yep, I am. And a lot of my draft stuff there. I still put a lot on Sportsology, too. We got playoff coverage. We've got coverage on Sonny Meadow getting hired by the Devils. So we got a lot of stuff there, too. Some Mets griping and what the Jets might do in the draft, too.
Oh, yeah. Look for all that and much, much more there. Thank you so much, Russ Cohen. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1919.